Hello? Hello? Is this thing working? Oh, yes. Oh, hello. I'm Vera Christmas. Yes, it's me. Oh, ages ago now, my old friend Cyan rang me up and asked me if I had a gap in my exciting life to record an exclusive Christmas documentary for all of you back there on planet Sky. Well, how could I refuse? Let me take you back, all the way back to the planet of Tinsel for a look behind the scenes of Doctor Who and the Christmas Games. So, how did the Christmas Gnome story come about? I asked the author, Steve Alexander, to explain the origins of this special Christmas adventure.
Well, as usual, what generally happens is that I choose an amusing title for a story and then have to write a story around it. It was the same with the Christmas Gnomes. I say, oh, let's do the Christmas Gnomes. Let's make it properly Christmassy. My other main inspiration was the Doctor Who Christmas specials, in a way, because I thought, although they're good stories and entertaining and fun and all that, I think they missed out on this sort of basic Christmassiness. You have a little bit of robot Santas, you have a little bit of running around, you have a little bit of snow, and that seems to do for Christmas. But no, there's a lot more of the obvious things to include that they haven't done, really. The basic aim of the story was to write the Christmassiest story ever.
Well, that's all very well, but were there any specific things you wanted in this story?
Mince pies, figgy puddings, killer gnomes, robot fridges. But the most important thing, I think, was to bring back old familiar characters from the previous Doctor Who audio play, Echoes of the Proton.
Oh, well, I'm always pleased to be asked back. I remember this one time with Barry, he asked me back. Well, that's actually a very long story. Anyway, here's Sarah, whoever he is.
As Steve will tell you, I often go around the house doing the Vera voice and saying silly Vera things. So she's never really gone away in between the two stories. She's always living in this house with us. Obviously, when Steve came to write the Christmas Gnome story and I heard Vera was coming back, I immediately started jumping in with some funny lines for her. So all the best bits I actually wrote. And then I ad-libbed everything else on the day. He didn't have very much to do with it at all, despite what he might tell you.
Steve Alexander, again!
Vera has a life of her own, entirely. And whoever writes her, it'll come out the same, just because it's Vera.
Yes, actually, you're probably right. I must admit, I do, when I get the script, change quite a few of the lines, really, and ad-lib around the lines when I do it, because I know her so well. A particular favourite of mine was the, again and again, you devil, where that the line was just written like that, and I thought it was far funnier just to say again and again and again and again, you devil. I hope everyone likes that bit, because I was particularly pleased when I heard that back.
Oh no, oh no, oh no!
Oh, I can't believe it! Of all the places to run into you!
Now I know this isn't a fantasy world.
Well, well, you keep running into my life again and again and again and again, you devil!
I've only ever met you once before, Vera Jundry, as I live and breathe.
Well, Doctor, you know, it's not Jundry anymore.
Ah, so you've met my wife then?
Your wife?
And of course she's got married again, which was a lovely surprise, and I've married the wonderful, the exuberant Dave Taylor.
I asked Dave what Father Christmas and Vera had in common.
Well, he's jolly, he's happy like Vera, and of course he has a bulging sack, which only needs to be emptied once a year.
Sci-heart again!
There's a nice little emotional story for the characters in this, where Father Christmas is just disinterested in life, really, at the start. And he's not giving Vera the attention she deserves, really, I think. it's kind of nice to see them work through all of that, and she works through her problems with Craig, and she comes out a lot happier at the end. I hope that she's going to be stable for a while and not go off and find Barry somewhere, because Wayne Jeffries don't want to marry him again. I have had the privilege of being married to some of the nicest people on planet Skaro, and long may that continue, although I'm hoping that we'll come back to Tinsel one day and see them in their old age together, because I think they're very well matched.
Of course, you can't have a Christmas story without good old Father Christmas, my lovely husband.
Ho, ho, ho! Welcome to my domain, Doctor Who.
It's Father Christmas!
Father Christmas was played by the wonderful Dave Taylor. What were the particular challenges of playing someone real?
It makes the part a lot easier to do, because of course he's well known. We all know who Father Christmas is. So unlike, you know, the fictional characters like the Doctor and so on, it was nice to play somebody who was real.
Does Dave think that the funny ad during the recording will come across in the finished version of the story?
Oh, I hope so, I hope so. There was lots of ho-ho-hos, of course. Yes, it was good fun. I do hope it comes across that way. I'm quite looking forward to listening to the final recording, because I've actually got no idea what was going on throughout the whole process, so I'm quite looking forward to actually listening to the story in its entirety.
Did Dave have a particular favourite moment in the script?
Yes, there was a particular paragraph which described the room with the doors leading to the typical kinds of Christmases, which I thought was very amusing and very well written, and it made me laugh as I was saying that, and I hope that part comes across quite well. And there was also the bit about Santa being in a tight hole. That was quite good fun. That caused lots of hilarity as well, as I'm sure you can imagine.
Ho ho ho! That was a tight one! My gosh!
Oh, I remember. We had Christmas gnomes in our homes, crimes in the mines, and killer robot fridge things in the kitchen. Oh, that fridge was a frightening thing. I was just so lucky that the lovely doctor was there to sort it out. Oh, and my wonderful cuddly husband, of course, too. Yes, of course. I asked the iconic scientist what he thought of being a fridge.
Unfortunately, I was only actually in a couple of scenes as the fridge, and I think the fridge was very hard done by. I think the fridge could have had more scenes, a whole episode, or even maybe a whole story, because I think that fridge was very misunderstood, and if it had been up to me, then I'd have given the fridge maybe a starring role and had him join the Doctor and become a companion at the end of the story, because I think having a fridge as a Doctor Who companion has just never been done before.
That fridge could never have offered the things I could have offered the Doctor if I was his companion. The fridge was simply a tool of the horrible little Christmas gnomes. Oh, I didn't like them very much at all. They were brought to life by two very fine actors. Firstly, here's Hank Cox, who tells us a little bit about his inspiration.
It was a surreal experience, actually, because I had to imagine myself as being a midget, which was quite difficult, actually. And I modelled my voice on Bob Hoskins, just because he had a sort of a rough Cockney voice, funny enough.
And now, here's Cy Hunt. He got very, very excitable while he was playing the Christmas gnomes.
Oh god, yes, that's going to come back to haunt me, I think. Because it kind of got more raspy as it went on. And I'm sure the gnome I did earlier on is a completely different gnome to the gnome I did at the end. Because he kind of morphed and turned into the elf character from Spectre of Lanyon Moor. So he started off and he ended up Sangreeda! Like that, so goodness knows how that's going to sound.
Now, the person who designed the voice for the Christmas gnomes is Steve Alexander. Here, he's going to talk you through the various different stages of making Ant and Cy sound a bit gnomey.
How to make a gnome voice step by step. What you do, first thing is you tidy up and you clean it up so that it sounds right.
Slaves! Scum!
And then you mix it into the right stereo place, and then you import it into the special gnome voice you maker, and you increase the pitch by 25%.
Although it pains me to say it, we've been told to let you have a rest break.
Of course, you could increase the pitch to 75%.
So put your tools down for 5 minutes.
Or even 200%.
What?
But those don't sound as good. It's much better to go with a little bit of gentle modulation, so you capture the original performance and stick at 25%. I think that's the right amount. And then you add reverb, and voila, you have your gnomic voice.
Slaves! Scum! Although it pains me to say it, we've been told to let you have a rest break. Anyone taking longer than 5 minutes will be beat to death with their own dismembered legs.
The gnomes weren't the only villains in this story. They were controlled by the Minister for Peace, Mr. Castello.
What could be more dangerous to the sanctity of our society as a time traveller? A time traveller that, by all accounts, is prepared to get involved, to meddle, and to change the course of history. You must give me the secrets of time travel so that they can be used responsibly. For the good of the Union.
I could never let you have the secrets of time travel.
Then you and all of those you have had contact with must die.
You can't get us in here. We're out of your reach, mister. I asked Steve Alexander to tell us what inspired him to create Castero and what were the challenges of writing a villain.
Castero went through many different versions, at least in my mind, depending on who was going to play him. Originally, I didn't really have anyone in mind, and what I kind of wanted was to counterpoint the fact that there's all this bonkers stuff going on, having a really classic, instantly identifiable black hat villain. But Castero turned out slightly differently, and that was the first change. The second change was when he became a woman, and so the template became Servalan from Blake 7 with all her slightly aggressive but also slightly seductive attitude. And in a way, some of those bits still survive in the lines. Although having Jono play it takes in yet another direction, because Jono's got a lot of character in his voice, which I hope we haven't muffled too much with the distortion. You know, you've got somebody who doesn't deliver the lines in a sort of flat, bassy kind of way, as some villains would, but somebody who's prepared to, who goes all over the vocal range and is a very interesting voice to listen to. And so that makes it very different again. So that's the three different Kesteros. What a great villain.
As Steve said, Castero was brought to life by peer stalwart Jono Simmons. I asked Jono if he enjoyed playing Castero.
Absolutely. I'm still quite new to this acting lark, but I have to say I'm well aware that most actors prefer playing villains than heroes, and I do understand why, because it does give you a chance to sort of chew the scenery and really get into the part, and I certainly had some fun with the role.
Did Jono feel he went over the top enough, I wondered?
Well, I'll leave that for the listeners to decide. Part of me feels I could even have tried a little bit more OTT, but hopefully I got the balance right.
I asked Jono to tell us what he thought of the story.
It's certainly quite fun. It's actually started to get me into the Christmas spirit, but I'm also going to be very interested to hear the whole story. What some of the listeners may not realise is that the story is very much recorded out of sequence, and also with this audio recording you don't need to be present when there's lots of scenes that you're not in, so you get a very fragmented view of what's going on. So I'm really looking forward to sitting down and listening to it all in story order.
Did you have a favourite moment in the script?
Actually, the moment I had most fun with, and I have to confess, this was not pre-planned or anything, it was literally spur of the moment. There's one particular line, and I'm not going to say it in this interview, but I think people will recognise it when they hear it. As soon as I saw the script, I automatically paid homage to a well-known, infamous Doctor Who story, and I'm fairly confident you'll understand which one it was. Perhaps being a bit enigmatic here, but I think if you've listened to the story, hopefully you'll pick up on it. You know, hopefully I'll be invited back, so long as the performance wasn't too bad. And that's something that, you know, I would hope to try and become a trademark to pay homage to that wonderful programme.
So, can you, our lovely listeners at home, work out which story that was? Castero wasn't the only villain. Oh, that nasty, duplicitous grandson of mine was there too, Scott, who you might remember from Giddy.
So now you've got the Christmas gnomes working for you. Did you have to butter all of them up with drink and sweet talk?
You've got it all wrong, Nick. In fact, you haven't got a clue. Now why don't you kneel?
No way. I'm not doing that again.
And what did various members of the cast think about being reunited with their old nemesis?
Everybody loved Scott, especially Nick, because he's just so filthy.
Oh, it was most enjoyable. It's so great that already we're being nostalgic and we're bringing back the old enemies, and you know, and plays that part so well. It's good to have that spark of that tension. It's fantastic
when you've got someone like that running around. I just think it makes it a lot of fun.
Whatever it is you're going to offer me, I'm not interested.
Oh, I'm sure once you're warmed up, you'll remember the chemistry between us.
I can remember it now. You drugged me.
So spiky. I've missed you, Nick.
I've been trying to forget you.
Enough.
The Christmas Gnomes introduces us to my cute as a buttermilk grandson, Craig. Oh, isn't he just gorgeous? Steve Alexander explains how Craig Gendry came about.
The whole thing about Craig being Vera's grandson came about as an entire mistake and piece of forgetfulness on my part when I originally wrote Scott as Vera's grandson, which I thought would be great because it would bring in this whole kind of family coming together for Christmas kind of thing, which I wanted to include as part of the Christmas stuff. And suddenly Si said to me, you do know that Scott was only pretending to be our grandson. And that's how Craig got invented.
But what about bringing the character to life? How did Pip Madley go about creating him? And what did he think of being part of the iconic Gendry family?
Well, I've never been asked to play a 12-year-old boy before. The main challenge really was trying to make my voice higher, because it's quite deep normally, so it's a bit difficult to make a sort of, hello, my name's Craig, and it tended to go up and down quite a lot, actually. And I think that was just his balls going up and down. I actually based my voice on Vera because I imagined that he would have a similar voice to Vera. So it's quite, hi, Doctor. So, yeah. I thought it'd be something like that. But yeah, it's quite nice. Vera's an iconic character. And I hope to see her in another PS Audio again.
Pip, what was your favourite scene?
My favourite scene was when Craig is reunited with Vera. Just because of the way he reacts towards her. Until then, he's been sort of very weedy, I guess. He's just sort of been, help me, I'm stuck and all this. And then suddenly when he sees Granny, sort of flips his lid, really. He sort of goes, what? You old cow and all this. And it's sort of, it's a nice change from just doing sort of Tiny Tim impression.
Is it Craig? Gran? Oh, Craig, I thought you were dead.
If Nick and Rob hadn't rescued me, I really would have died down there.
You left me, you old cow! You left me down there in those dark mines! I never thought I'd get out again! Don't talk to me! I hate you! What did Vera's creator, Syhart, think of the new members of the family?
Well, that was a bit of a surprise, especially as Scott had been posing as her grandson in the first story, and Scott said she likes it if I call her Nan. So that was a bit odd, suddenly to have a real proper grandson, and I'm assuming that Craig is her real proper grandson. But I think Pip does it very well, and really, it just adds to the mystery that is Vera's life.
Of course, recording doesn't always go as smoothly as it should. Here's a selection of behind-the-scenes moments and everyone's favourite outtakes.
I got it right. I'm sure.
I've still got that lockpick stashed in my pants. Lockpicks. I've still got them.
When what should I find in them? There.
The effects of the bacteria can be counteracted by introducing brassica. Oh, you just stay on purpose. Brassica oleracea.
I don't know how to pronounce it.
What do you mean?
I don't know.
We can find out if you read the next one.
We had to wiki it.
Do your wiki, Ricky.
Brassica. All are racing. Okay, I'll say that again.
Set that door. Put the bench back up.
It's just a shot. Shut that door.
Perhaps you would like to fill me in over a glass of Schlur.
Schlur.
You looking for something specific?
That's enough.
There's a tinsel knot tying set. Oh God, my voice.
There's a tinsel.
Perhaps there's Granville.
Oh, I was going to ask actually, do you want a silly voice or anything, or just my voice?
Give me a leg up and I'll seal off this shaft with my Stronic screwdriver.
A Stronic one, though?
Yes. the latest model.
Which makes me sound like a complete freak. Oh my god!
We're editing that out.
The Christmas is... Christmas... The Christmas...
Well, entertaining guests is his job. It's up to us.
What?
No, not you. Okay, no, it's not. No, because you're actually appearing on the screen.
Will you open the barricades and let Father Christmas through?
Shut the door! Put the bins back!
It's time to run like you've never run before!
It's going down well, yeah.
I don't believe it! It's Kestrel, the Minister of Peace! He's good.
Let me out! Let me out!
I think it starts off. It's alright,
but
gradually gets more.
Alright,
yeah, it's
very
tight.
Let me out! Let me out! Let me out!
Or is it? Traces of biogenetic nanomorphic cells. I think so.
Yes, we had more trouble with, or is it?
Yeah. Or is it? Traces of biogenetic nanomorphic cells. But where does the ribonucleic acid come in? You really hate me, don't you? My next line is, Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled pepper.
You just did it. Okay, just say, where does the ribonucleic acid...
But where does the ribonucleic acid... I can't say it, just annoying. But where does the ribonucleic...
I'm sure it is. Fancy a truffle?
There's people watching.
Whoa, boy!
Oh! You're in my ear, voice.
Excellent,
excellent. You're going to pay for this.
Oh, God.
For various reasons, scenes don't always make it to the final cut. Sometimes it's because the actors say the lines a bit too fast or a bit too slow. Sometimes the running time is just too long and you can't fit all the scenes in. And sometimes the writing's just not very good. But that doesn't happen very often with Planet Scaro audios. Anyway, one scene from episode 1 didn't make it through to the final cut. This is scene 3 and you can hear it here exclusively now!
Hey, Dancer! Has there been any word about the missing reindeer?
I haven't heard anything. Where can they be? I thought we'd find them stuffing themselves at the dinner table, but no, they've vanished.
I'm sure they'll turn up. I spoke to Father Christmas. He seemed so happy for a change.
I haven't seen him like this for ages, Dasher. It's because we've got guests, I suppose. He doesn't seem worried about our absent friends, though, does he?
Well, entertaining guests is his job. It's up to us to keep things running.
Our visitors seem very nice. I've got a visual on them on this scanner up here.
I don't believe in Father Christmas. Quietly. I hope they're not too nice, Dancer.
Surely you tease, Mr. Dasher. You know you're the only reindeer for me.
Oh, stop licking my antlers.
Dancer, it's Rudolph here.
All right, Chief, you found them.
We've got the situation here. I'm at the old toys factory. Contact the big boss and tell him we'd better get over here.
With all the scenes in the can, the long process of post-production began. A change from the previous PS audios, Christmas Gnomes had its post-production carried out by 3 members of the team. Here, Cy Hunt, Pip Madley, and the omnipresent Stephen Alexander talk us through the various challenges of bringing the story to completion.
Probably the biggest challenge is, the story not being mine, I suppose. It's the first one I haven't had a hand in writing. And on top of that, it was kind of like an extra story, so I was really finishing up on Magical History Tour and not giving the new story that much thought. we've done a huge amount of audios this year, and so this was a bit like someone bringing out the cheese course after 18 Christmas dinners.
It's been fantastic working as part of a team as well. Admittedly part of a relay team, because Cy is doing episode 1, I'm doing episode 2, and Master Pit Madley is doing episode 3.
There'll be a lot of challenges, yeah, because I've never done a full episode of Doctor Who like that before. The main challenge will be trying to keep the style between the episodes, really, I think, because it's quite difficult if you've got your own ideas of what it should sound like, and you've all trying to use the same sort of music and the same effects, and just trying to keep it together, really. It's quite difficult, you know, but I'm looking forward to doing it. It's just like doing the jigsaw, really. I've nicked that off Cy Hunt. He said that about the last one.
Considering who we are and the amount of jokes that go in, a lot of the audios have been surprisingly serious, so I thought we could get away with comedy horns and boing sounds and things like that this time. I thought that would be fun. I'm not sure how much of that actually went in to the final play, but I think the spirit of that is there. The script is certainly more offbeat than we've done before.
Science again!
I'm a great believer in my own instincts. It's very hard for me to hand something over to someone else or even be a bit player in it and not worry about the results. The script is the foundations of the finished play, really. You don't read a script and get a play out, because all kinds of other things come into play once it enters into that different medium and has been recorded. Things like pauses and music and breathing and pace, which you don't get from reading it.
Steve Alexander.
It was so fantastic hearing the lines that I'd written up there with, you know, everybody says it, it's just great to hear it with somebody saying them, with nice music in the background and produced to be proper. So it was a real thrill hearing what the others had done.
Science again.
You forget.
Excuse me.
What is it? What do you want?
What are you doing?
I'm doing an interview. Go away.
Do you want to talk to me?
No, you're just a gnome. Now piss off.
Oh, what if that's how you're going to be? Humbug. Humbug.
Yeah, sorry about that. I've never had the pleasure of listening to even a new scene, I don't think. I realised a few months ago when I got the documentary for History Tour from Pip, and I put it on my player, and I went to bed and just listened to it, and grinned like a hyena for half an hour. I imagine that's probably how people must feel when they hear the stories. Either that, or that bloody Cy Hunt has cut all my lines, I don't know. And I didn't really think I'd get to do it this time either, as I didn't think I'd be able to stop myself listening in to all the other guys' gnome scenes as they were finished. Luckily, the Rotters never actually put them online anyway, so here I am. I've got almost a whole story to listen to now.
And very good it was too. But I want to know, what further adventures will my lovely old Doctor be getting up to next year with everyone from Planet Skaro?
There's all sorts of interesting developments coming up next year for the Planet Skaro audios. We should have a new story from Steve early in the new year that's called Heart of the Haniad, and introduces a new companion who will also be cropping up in the second story, which I'll be writing, which will be called Heist, and that should be a fast-moving roller coaster romp of 2 episodes long. And then hopefully we've got stories by O. Martin Penny, Pip, and the Doctor himself, Paul Monk, should be writing a story if all goes well. I'm not going to reveal very much about the plans that have been laid down, but there's a lot of discussion, and hopefully we should have a lot of fun adventures coming.
There are some members of the cast, but they'd be happy to come back and star in some future audios.
I'm loving being part of the recordings. It's always nice to be asked to play a part. With regards to the future, I guess there's a couple of things I would maybe like to do. I really enjoyed playing the part of Ben in Keepsake. I really enjoyed it. I do struggle with character voices as such, like the Santa. It took me a long time to get a hold of it. But whereas Ben, I could just kind of use my normal voice, and I felt as though I could concentrate more on the actual acting and get into the part than spending more time being concerned about trying to disguise my voice or enhancing my voice. So a reprise of Ben would be good. I think there's a lot of things that have yet to be explored there. You know, Ben and Rob have obviously got a huge history. However, anything you want to throw at me, I'll be happy to give it a go.
Dave Taylor there. Now, Hank Cox.
I don't know, really. I like to be involved with them because it's fun, but I don't want to be somebody who pops up in every single one because it gets boring for the listeners. I think that's one of the reasons I try to do a silly voice with the gnome, so that I don't keep sounding the same. What would I like to play? Who would I like to play? I don't know. Anything that I get offered, really, because I think it's fun.
Now, Dave Tudor talks about what he thinks the future holds for the Doctor's companion, Nick.
Well, if you expect me to take my trousers off next player, I might be persuaded. It all depends. It all depends on the quality of the script. We don't know the full story about Nick yet. I suspect we'll be exploring that in greater depth in future plays, with or without his shirt on, I don't know. There's still a lot more to come. Wait and see. I say wait and see. I don't know what's to come, but I'm looking forward to it.
And finally, some last thoughts on the Planet Scar Audio Adventures.
I really enjoy being a part of the Planet Scar Audios. I'm dead proud of everything we've achieved in the last 2 years. I think we've done some amazing stuff. It's just a joy to be involved in something that everyone in the forum can potentially be as involved in as they want to, from writing to the production through to making the covers, everything. I think this is something that Planet Scaro can be incredibly proud of, and I hope that everyone has enjoyed what we've done this year.
Well, now it's Christmas. Well, so now, this is you lot at home, and here on Tinsel, it's always, always Christmas. But in the spirit of the best friends on Planet Scaro, I asked the cast what was the best Christmas present they've ever received.
So many to choose from. One of the ones that really sticks in my mind was receiving a Transformer toy when I was about 3 years old. This was obviously the Optimus Prime and your Jazz toy, so I had the big red truck all those years ago.
I think my favourite sort of Christmas presents, I have to look a bit further back when, you know, early 80s when I used to get just loads of Star Wars stuff. Well, I say loads of Star Wars stuff, it's probably like one or two things, but it seemed a lot at the time. But they were always the best Christmases, I think.
I suppose there has to be one particular thing that was my favourite Christmas present when I was a kid, and that was the Talking Canine, which was just awesome. Oh, I had so much fun with that Talking Canine. I had him on a bit of string, pulling him around the garden. He used to say amazing things like danger, danger, and affirmative master, would you believe? Oh, that was my favourite Doctor Who toy ever.
Oh, well, I think the best Christmas present I ever had was Peter Haining's 20 Years a Celebration book, and the TARDIS tent as well. Well, you can't beat the TARDIS thing, can you? It was smelt lovely, smelt of PVC, and it stood outside my bedroom door so you could walk into it and then kind of walk into the bedroom, only you couldn't because it annoyingly didn't have two flaps, so you had to crawl under the thing. But when you went in there, it was like being in a little blue world because everything was blue, because it was blue PVC, and it smelt lovely. And it was my favourite thing ever until my dad took it apart and used the poles to grow beans up.
Best Christmas present I ever had was a red BMX when I was about 12, and my stepfather and my mum got our next door neighbour to keep it on Christmas Eve, and then he knocked on the door on Christmas Day with it and said, "This is your Christmas present." And I remember when they opened the door and I started crying because I was so happy at getting that. So that was the best Christmas present I ever had.
Best Christmas present I ever received was a black sleigh when I was a kid that actually had a steering wheel in the middle and two runners that you could actually control. It was really cool, but it had an extra special moment as well because I was dead young when I got it, and I reckon it had been stored in the garage because in the morning there was two perfect sleigh marks leading up to the house, which of course my parents told me were left by Father Christmas, which of course I'm sure was the case. It was only as I got a little bit older that I thought possibly maybe they could have been left by another sleigh, so that's still up in there. But it was a great present and I used it absolutely loads, and it was good fun. So that's probably the best Christmas present I ever had.
Probably the Gift of Life. Yes, and Genesis Mammoth or DVD. That's fantastic.
I suppose a lot of them have been Doctor Who related. I remember Christmas 1987 when I got my first Doctor Who video, which was The Seeds of Death. That was quite a special moment.
It might have been back in 1992 when I got my first actual CD player, which was a sort of combination CD, record player, radio and cassette deck, and it still works to this day. And it was the first time I'd ever had a CD player, and even though they'd been available for a good 6 or 7 years beforehand, I was very much of the opinion, oh, you know, I've got tapes, I've got records, I'm perfectly happy with them. And it was only when I got given a CD player and realised what a fantastic difference it made. Off the top of my head, that was a particularly welcome Christmas present.
There was last Christmas, where I'd asked for the big remote control K9, and we got through Christmas Day, and I hadn't had it. There were all these presents come out, and maybe, but no, I didn't. And the very last present was a big box for me, and it was the remote control K9, which Steve's sister and her boyfriend were bringing me. Oh, I was just so pleased. It sounds really silly.
When I first started going out with Sam, one of the things that he noticed fairly early on was that I was carrying around with me a little travel alarm clock that I would take with me so I'd know what time it was. This was because I'd given up wearing a watch some years ago, and I didn't have a watch, and so I was always finding myself in situations where I needed to know the time. But he thought I was very silly, and so that Christmas he bought me a brand new watch with a pair of cufflinks, and that surely must be the greatest Christmas present I've ever had, the gift of time.
Oh, what lovely memories those were. But there am I, girl. What would you like for Christmas? Well.
One day, I shall come back. Yes, I shall come back.
Well, that's what they all say. One day I'll be back. My Barry said I'll be back one day. He never came back. It wasn't a Tuesday or a Thursday he came back. I'll tell you this now. So don't you go trying that old line on me, Doctor.
Until then, there must be no regrets, no tears, no anxiety.
So you're my potential husband, Dandy the Clown. So which one of you lucky doctors is going to marry me then?
Well, we've assessed the situation.
Oh, just as I thought. Neither of you. Oh, I just have to marry that nice Corporal Benson. Oh, he's a bit of a looker, isn't he?
Oh, my word. We are in trouble, aren't we?
Considering the quality of everything that you have, madam, I would say that your prices are rather expensive.
Oh, get you!
Madam, what year is this?
It's 2013, you big silly.
Where did you get that dress?
Oh, I found it, didn't I? Back in the wardrobe!
I'm a Time
Lord. Whoa, I know you're a Time Lord! Welcome to the House of Fun! Now that's madness, Doctor! Oh, that's four reds in a row. I think that's Connect Four, Doctor!
Occasionally, just occasionally, your smugness infuriates me!
And what did you have planned for dessert, Doctor?
Unlimited rice pudding, etc., etc.!
Oh, rice pudding, that's my favourite. The perfect end to a lovely romantic dinner together. Now, where did I leave that lovely pair of gold stilettos? I can't see them anywhere.
These shoes! They fit perfectly.
Oi, you, come back with them! No, you can't run in those heels! Come back!
Do you want to come with me?
Yeah, but only if you carry the shopping.
Just stand there, because I'm going to hug you. Is that all right? Here we go. Coming in.
Oh, you might be the loveliest doctor of them all, I reckon.
And I'm Tegan Javanka. Who might you be?
I'm Vera, your wanker. Well, it's a lovely dream. But I know that in my heart of hearts, I always like my doctor the best, with his lovely mousy shirt and lovely silver tunic jacket.
Have you got that?
I think so, Doctor. Oh, this is just like old times, isn't it?
No, I can assure you that this is completely different. Off you go, then.
Oh, he's my doctor. Well, that's it from me, Vera Christmas, here on Tinsel. Just enough time for me to say a very happy Christmas to all of you. Bye-bye!